Okay, so we're on the Gemara in Daf Chof Beis Hamad Aleph that we saw towards the bottom of the Omud. We saw this inyan of Kosher Zivugon Kekriyas Yamsuf. We said there's a difference in Zivug Rishon and Zivug Sheni. Let's keep on moving. Omar Rav Shmuel, we're on the second bottom line. Omar Rav Shmuel, Bar Nachman. Lekol yesh tmura chutz me'eshes nu'urim. Chutz me'eshes nu'urim. We have to. I must be honest. I didn't look into the mafarshim of the sugya. We know many people. Rabbi Eliyahu David is be'ezus Hashem, one of them who will be boina abayis with a zivug sheni. And we know many people who, even at a younger age, did so and had children and made a whole family. So how we are to understand some of these mamari chazal would clearly need to be looked at. But either way. Omar Rav Shmuel bar Nachman lekol yesh tmura. Everything is, as it were, interchangeable. Chutz me'eshes nu'urim. Besides for the wife from one's younger days, shenema ve'eshes nu'urim kitimos. Mastin or Rabbi Yitzchak Brei, ein odom moitzi koiras ruach elo me'ishta rishonoi. So how would you translate koiras ruach? A person would only find a peace of mind from his ishtei rishona shenema yihi borech turning over nu'uraich. So it would sound like that a person will have peace of mind, if that's how they translate kiras ruach, from his ishtei rishona, and all of that was said in the name of Rab Shmuel bar Nachman. So omar loy kegoin ma'an. What would be an example of a woman whom gave kairas ruach, who gave her husband a peace of mind? Omar loy, so he said, kegoin imcha, like your mother. In other words, the son asked the father, what would be an example of a woman who would give kairas ruach? And he says, your mother. I have a wonderful wife. I have a wonderful wife. That's what it sounds like he's saying. Eini, is that really true? V'ha makri le'Rabbi Yehuda le'Rabbi Yitzchok. Didn't you once refer to your wife, a pasuk in Keheles, u'moitzei ani mar mimoves es ha'isha asher hu mitzurim v'charomim? The pasuk in Keheles says that sometimes, tragically, one can have a wife who is mar mimoves, is as bitter as death. V'omalei Kugoin man, for who would be an example of that? Vamalei kugoin imcha, like your mother. So what's going on? The first time he was asked, what's an example of a woman who gives kairas ruach, who gives peace of mind? He said, your mother. But on another occasion, he referred to the same woman as being as mar mimavis. So what's going on? Did he get on with her, or did not get on with her? Something doesn't seem to add up.
Maybe she was schizophrenic.
Schizophrenic. It's funny you say
Sometimes
that.
it's sometimes the other.
I was at a certain event recently where my Kornfeld was there, and somebody came up to me with his smartphone and said, look, there's a photograph of you going round. Somebody photographed you attending one of these rallies, protesting a certain type of school, whatever. So Rav Kornfeld turned around to me and says, you know, it's funny. Some accuse me of being too liberal, and some accuse me of being too fanatical. He said, I must be the schizophrenic rabbi. That's what he told me. You can't keep everybody happy. But I'll cop on him. So what's going on over here? This is on the one hand, the father says to the child that your mother will be an example of the isha who gives kairas ruach, and on the other hand, of the isha who is mar mimavis. So is he happy with her or not? What's going on? So the Gemara says, mitkaf tkifa, but ibure ma'abro b'milo. So on the one hand, she's mitkaf tkifa, she's very tough. So if you want to know why did I describe her as mar mimavos, because she's tough. So why did you say she gives her kiras ruach? Because she's ibure ma'avra. Rashi says on the very first Rashi in the Omud, Ma'averes al midoy seho. She, even though she's got a very tough personality, but she's willing to be Ma'aver al midoy seho b'milo. With a brief word, She's happy to be ma'aver al midosav. So therefore, if you want to know, is she considered mar mimoves, or is she considered to be giving kairas ruach? So essentially, she'll be mar mimoves because she has this very tough type of obstinate personality. But a ma'isa, she always gives in. She's always ma'aver al midosav. And therefore, in the final analysis, he was happy with her, and she gave him kairas ruach. Okay, we're moving on. This is not a halachic sugya, so let's keep on going. Oma, Rav Shmuel bar Unyo Mishmei de Rav. Isho Goylom hi. Now, Goylom is an interesting word. I'm curious how Art Scroll translated.
Unfinished.
Unfinished.
I think so. Is it? Wait a minute. No. Unfinished vessel.
Right. You have, for example, when a person makes a vessel, so imagine you take a piece of wood, a flat piece of wood, and then you start fashioning it into a shape of a cup. So at first, we would refer to it as a goylom. We're all familiar with the word goylom. For example, the Maralmi Prague is alleged to have made a goylom. But again, it's the same type of principle. It was an unfinished person. It was, he had some sort of life force, but he wasn't able to speak, etc., etc. So a goylom is an unfinished item. Even in modern Hebrew, chomrei gelem is raw items, raw materials. So now, a woman, says the Gemara, is essentially an unfinished item.
Art Scroll qualifies that. It says a virgin woman.
Right. We're talking about a woman who's never been married before. Elo ve'eino kireses bris, elo lemisha oso kli. And she forms a bris, a covenant, with one who makes her into a kli. What does that mean, makes her into a kli? In other words, by marrying her, having relations with her, so now she is the finished item, because now she is dedicated and allocated for the husband. Shenema ki boy alayech oisayech Hashem tzokos shemoi. Says Rashi at the top. Goylom hi koydom shenivala, before they've had relations together. Goylom, says Rashi, is a kli shaloi nigmar, a vessel which has not been finished. Koru goylom kedetanan, it's a Mishnah, goylme kli eit, tamein, etc., etc. Back into the Gemara, says the Gemara, Tana, Ein ish meis elo leishtoi, ve'ein ishto meiso elo lebalo. When either a woman or man passes away, then the one who feels it most, obviously, is the spouse. So how do I know? So the Gemara brings a pasuk. By the way, you may be wondering, why on earth would you need to bring a pasuk for this? Isn't it obvious? Obviously, if a man dies, then the one who feels it most is the wife. And if the wife dies, the one who feels it most is the husband. So this reminds me of something which is very topical, because we read it on Shabbos. The Chofetz Chaim once asked somebody, tell me, do you think that tomorrow morning the sun will rise? He said, yes. And then tomorrow evening the sun will set? Yes. And the day after it will rise? Yes. How do you know? So the person told the Chofetz Chaim, because that's always the way it's been. I mean, this has been for thousands of years. Why all of a sudden should be different tomorrow? So the Chofetz Chaim said, okay, that's fine. That's how you know it. I'll tell you how I know it. I know it because the Torah writes in Parashas Noach, Yoim v'layla lo yishpoisu. Night and day will never be stopped. There is a continuous cycle. So what's the machloikas between this person and the Chofetz Chaim? The machloikas is, what is the source of our knowledge? So this person was telling the Chofetz Chaim, well, the source of my knowledge is from the very fact that I open my eyes and I see that the sun rises and sets every day. So safe to assume it's going to happen tomorrow, which is a perfectly valid statement. The Chofetz Chaim says, all my knowledge has its source in the Torah. However obvious and overwhelming and evident it may be, but I prove it from the Torah. That's my source of knowledge. My source of knowledge is in the Torah. If the Torah says Yom v'Laila lo yishvoisu, there'll always be night and day, then it'll always be night and day. Imagine a scientist would come up to us now and say, I'd like to prove to you beyond any shadow of a doubt that tomorrow morning, Wednesday, Parashas Lech Lecha, the sun will not rise. It's the famous syndrome. It happens every 5,784 years on a Wednesday morning. And he'd bring out a whole piece of paper with diagrams and mathematical equations, and the grand conclusion is, therefore, you can clearly see that on Wednesday morning, the sun will not rise. What will we all tell him? But it will. What do you mean? I've just proven to you I'm the top scientist in the Harvard University. It doesn't matter. But the Torah says, Yom v'layla lo yishvoisu, every single day will be sun and night and day, and that's all there is. There is, I once quoted this maybe more than once on the Parashat Shir, the most phenomenal tshuva in the Igros Moshe. Just to understand the beauty of this tshuva, Reb Moshe Feinstein, as we know, passed away just before Purim, and his Levaya actually came to Eretz Yisrael. By the time it arrived in Eretz Yisrael, it was Purim in Yerushalayim. And Shlomo Zalman Auerbach paskened that everybody should be mema'it, their simcha, because of Purim. At the Levaya, apparently, this is what I was told, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was in attendance, and he was called up to give a hesped. So he took the microphone and he just said, I'm not worthy of giving a hesped to the Gadol Hador, and that was the end of his hesped. Who can possibly be maspid Reb Moshe Feinstein? The only person in the world who could be maspid Reb Moshe Feinstein is Reb Moshe Feinstein himself. And in one tshuva, without intending to, obviously, he does exactly that. And it's the most phenomenal tshuva. And if anybody needs a hesped of Reb Moshe Feinstein, you only need to read this tshuva. Reb Moshe Feinstein, as we know, we're going a little bit off topic, but Reb Moshe Feinstein, as we know, was asked the biggest and the most severe shailas. In fact, I heard after Reb Eliashiv was nifta, which we all remember, just over 10 years ago or so, maybe a bit more, there were hespedim in Ramat Beit Shemesh Aleph, and Rabbi Goldstein incredibly said that somebody once knocked on the door very late at night in Reb Eliashiv's home, and the Rebbetzin answered, and the questioner said, I apologize for knocking so late at night, but I have a serious pikuach nefesh shaila. I apologize for disturbing the Rav. To which she apparently said, you don't have to apologize. Ever since Reb Moshe Feinstein was nifta, we're used to this. Which is another way of saying that as long as Reb Moshe Feinstein was alive, he was getting the biggest shailas across the world in Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh. So Reb Moshe Feinstein was getting the most chomor shailas, and a lot of the shailas that he were being asked, obviously, were cutting edge, new technology type shailas, fertility type shailas, shailas which had never been addressed prior to his times. So in one particular tshuva, he addresses a whole complicated fertility treatment. And it's a lengthy tshuva, and the bottom line is, whatever the process is, it's not negiah now, he says it's fine, it's permissible. In another tshuva, he writes, and it's clear, you see from the whole context, he writes back to somebody who criticizes him for the first tshuva. And he clearly, because Reb Moshe brings the whole quote, and this writer to Reb Moshe Feinstein clearly writes to Reb Moshe Feinstein that your psak is wrong. And if you're matter this type of treatment, you don't realize the terrible kilkul you could bring to Klal Yisrael. And worst of all, he then accuses Reb Moshe Feinstein. He says, the opinions upon which you based your psak clearly come from outside of Torah. So this is a very, very sharply worded tshuva. Reb Moshe Feinstein, Beroiv Gadlusoi, obviously does not respond in sharp terminology, as in putting the questioner down. Just he writes very simply. He says, Baruch Hashem, every single one of my hashkofas come from no other place than the Torah HaKadosh. Everything I think, everything I do, and everything I say. everything. And then he writes back again, very, very delicately, but it's clearly what he means. And he says, and those who accuse me of otherwise, they must look inwards. And it's quite clearly that their own hashkafas are coming from outside of the Torah. So if nobody can give a hesped for Ramesha Feinstein, Ibram Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, then the only person who can is Ramesha Feinstein himself. And Ramesha Feinstein says, all of my knowledge and all of my way of thinking and all of my opinions and all of my halachas and all of my tshuvas and everything about me, everything comes from the Torah HaKadosh. So that is the greatest hesped for Ramesha Feinstein. And that's what the Chofetz Chaim was saying. How do I know that the sun will rise tomorrow? Not because I know it empirically or scientifically or emotionally, because the Torah says so. Finished. Everything I know comes from the Torah. And therefore, back to our sugya. If the Gemara says that if a spouse passes away, the one who feels it most is the husband or wife. So we might think to ourselves, well, why on earth would you need a pasuk to back that up? Isn't it the most obvious thing? And the answer is, it might well be obvious. But if we can find a Torah source, then that is the source. So have a look at the Gemara. Says the Gemara, Ein ish meis ela leishtoi, shenema vayomos Elimelech ishnomi. When Elimelech passed away, so he is referred to as the husband of Naomi. Why are we pointing that out? We know that Elimelech is the husband of Naomi. The answer is, to illustrate this point, that when he passes away, the one who feels it most is his wife Naomi. What about the other way around? Ve'ein isho meiso elo labalo, shenema, as it says, v'ani bevoi mi padon, meiso olai rochel. The key word there is olai. Yaakov says that rochel imenu, whose yacht site, if I'm not mistaken, is today. So rochel imenu, Yaakov says, meiso olai, she died as it were upon me. What does it mean, she died upon me? It means I'm the one who feels it most. So we have a Torah source, as mentioned, even though it's something that might be considered very obvious, but we have a Torah source, and therefore that indeed becomes our source. Okay, so we learned that part of the Gemara a little bit quickly for reasons that were obvious. It was mainly agadeic rather than halachic. We're now beginning a short halachic sugya, and hopefully soon the third perek, a very geshmaka perek, extremely halachic, which is on the very next Omid, and we move forward. Says the Gemara. Ein royin oisai. So we saw in the Mishnah that one should not see the king getting a haircut. So whilst on the subject, the Gemara will now discuss the subject of the Melech taking a haircut. Tana Rabbanan. Melech mistaper b'kol yoim. A king must take a haircut every single day. Why that is to be the case, we'll see you soon. Koyein Godoil, may Erev Shabbos le'Erev Shabbos. He does not need to take a haircut every day, but rather every Friday. Erev Shabbos to Erev Shabbos. And a Koyein Hedyoi, it's enough if Echor l'Shloishim Yoim. He has a haircut once every 30 days. Now, where is this coming from? What's the source? So the Gemara says, Melech mistaper b'chol yoim. Shenemar, it's a posuk in Yeshaya, Melech b'yoifyov techezeno einecho. The Melech in all his beauty is should hold your eye. So the Melech always has to look absolutely yoifi, has to have yoifi. And as we know, a person clearly looks best just after he's taken a haircut. That's when he looks most presentable. Therefore, the melech, there is a requirement for him, melech b'yoifi, and that's why he has to have a haircut every single day. So what about a kohen gadol? Says the Gemara, kohen gadol me'erev Shabbos. Why? Omer av Shmuel bar Nachman, Omer av Yechanan. Hoyil u'mishmorois mischadchois. That's when the Mishmar, we know, have a look at Rashi, third line. We know there were groups of Koyanim. How many altogether? 24. Which basically meant that every group served in the Beis HaMikdash approximately twice a year. Because each one was there for a week. When did they show up in the Beis HaMikdash? So the Rashi says, Mishmorois mischalfois. What does mischalfois mean? They would interchange. Umischachois, and the new group would come in, b'Shabbos. Shabbos, that's when the interchange happened. That was the changing, as it were, of the guard, the changing of the kohenim. Zu yoitza, v'zu nechneses. V'tzarech lehistaper. Therefore, the kohen gadol needs to take a haircut mipnei mishmeres chadosha zu. He needs to take a haircut for the new group of kohenim who are coming in. Hanichneses sheyiruhu beyoifi, so they should see him beyoifi. So, unlike the melech, where there is a specific requirement that he should be in his situation of yoifi every single day, not for the kohen, he needs to look presentable when the kohenim will see him first. Now, obviously, the kohenim will see him on Shabbos, but he can't take a haircut on Shabbos, obviously. So therefore, he will have to have a haircut on Erev Shabbos, such that when the new kohenim enter, they will be greeted by the kohen gadol, who looks there in all his glory and splendor. One more, yeah.
Does the kohen gadol get a haircut during Sfira and all these other times that you're not allowed to?
Yeah, there's all drabonons, yeah. Says the Gemara, one more halacha. So we've dealt with the melech, we've dealt with the kohen gadol. What about the kohen? We said that a kohen, he has a haircut once every 30 days. Where does that come from? Says the Gemara, kohen hedyot echad l'shloishim yoim. He has to have a haircut once every 30 days. D'ksiv, because it says, v'roisham lo yigalechu. On the one hand, he's not allowed to shave off his head, shave off the hair of his head completely. But upera lo yishlechu. The pasuk in Yecheskel, upera means his hair lo yishlechu. It should not be sent far. It shouldn't have long hair. Kesus yikasmu es roishehem. So what is pera? What's the definition of long hair? On the one hand, the pasuk says he shouldn't have overly short hair. Shouldn't be all shaven off. But on the other hand, it shouldn't be too long. Now, what's the definition of too long? So the Gemara says, pera minozir. We have a gzeira shava. It uses the word over here, uperach lo yishlechu. And it also uses the word pera with regard to nozir. Ksiv hocha pera lo yishlechu. So it uses the word pera. V'ksiv hasam gidel pera sa'aroishoi. How long does the nozir have? Mala halon shloishim yoim, afkan shloishim yoim. V'tna nami stam nazira shloishim yoim. So because the nozir, a standard naziris, unless you stipulate clearly otherwise, but a standard naziris is 30 days. And by the way, how do we know that a nozir is a minimum of 30 days? So the Gemara immediately... V'hosam minolon. So it's all fine and well, you're bringing me a proof by virtue of the Gzeira Shava from Nozir, but how indeed do we know that's the halacha with regard to Nozir? Where does it say anywhere in the Torah that a Nozir is supposed to be for 30 days? The Gemara says, it doesn't say it clearly. Omar Rav Masna Domakro Kodosh Yihyeh. What is the gematria of Yihyeh? Yud Hey is 15. Another Yud Hey is another 15. Says the Gemara altogether, that's Tlosin Hava. So a Nozir has to be a Nozir for 30 days. So if a Nozir is for 30 days and then he cuts off his hair, so you see that's the definition of long hair. If we have a Gzeira Shava from Nozir to a Kohen, so just like the Nozir can't have hair which is longer than 30 days, so too the Kohen also must not have his hair longer than 30 days. There is, by the way, a beautiful Meshechachma, a very important Meshechachma. We know We said it this morning in davening. Rabbi Shmuel, b'shloish esrei midos ha'teira nidreshes bohem. There are various different ways of extrapolating halachas from the Torah. So we have a kal v'chomer, we have a gzeirah shava, we have a klal, we have a prat, etc., etc., etc. Gematria does not feature on that list. It does not say in that list of Rabbi Shmuel that you can derive halachas based on a gematria, and yet that's exactly what we're doing over here with Nozir. There is no other Torah source for this halacha that a nozir is a nozir for only 30 days, other than the gematria. Now, there are other sugyas that suggest that you can learn things from a gematria, but clearly a gematria is a very, for want of a better word, vague way of teaching us a halacha. So Rav Meir Simcha, the Meshech Chochma, says a remarkable observation. And he says, it's true. On the one hand, the Torah did have to hint somewhere what is the minimal length of Naziris. But on the other hand, he says, the Torah bedafka did not want to spell it out. Why not? Because if we're really asking the question, how long should a Nozir be a Nozir? The real answer to that question is, as long as it takes. Naziris is a process. It's not just an undertaking. Naziris is a process by which the person has to come out changed. So as the Meshech Chochma himself says, how long must that process take? And the answer is, as long as it takes. So therefore, the Torah Bedafka did not want to spell out clearly a magic number 30. Why? Because what the Torah really wanted to emphasize is, there's no magic number. Each person, however long it takes. And it's in fact being pointed out how beautiful it is that where is this being learned from? Nozir Yihyeh. Yihyeh is future tense. It doesn't say Nozir who. He is a Nozir, but rather he will be a Nozir. Why is it written in future tense? Because the whole purpose of the Naziris is that it should remain with him in the future as well. In fact, once the Nozir finishes becoming a Nozir, we know that one of the halachas of a Nozir is he's not allowed to drink wine. Once he's finished his Naziris, the Loshon of the Pasuk is V'achar, and after that, Yishte ha-Nozir Yayin. Then the Nozir can drink wine. So some of the commentaries ask, one second, why are you calling him a Nozir? He's no longer a Nozir. So why are you saying, why does the Torah write, and afterwards the Nozir may drink the wine? He's no longer a Nozir. Why are you referring to him as a Nozir? And they point out the same message. Even though technically he's not a Nozir, but the change in the person as a result of being a Nozir, the whole aim of the game is that it should remain with him forever, such that even when he's finished keeping the halachas, technically we still refer to him as a Nozir. And that's what it means, Nozir year. Not the idea is you take on a short, sharp commitment and then once it's finished, it's all over. But rather, Nozir Yihyeh. But that's from Meir Simcha's beautiful interpretation. Why does the Torah not write clearly how long a Nozir has to be? And the answer is because the Torah didn't want to emphasize that, because the real answer is however long it takes. However long it takes in order to ensure that Nozir Yihyeh, he will remain a Nozir. And this, I feel, it's very important to point out during the times that we're in at the moment. Because when a Yid undergoes a tzara, whether it's in private, as an individual, or public, national tzara like we're ones in at the moment. So our immediate reaction, and this is correct, and this is the reaction of Klal Yisrael Kedoshim, is I need to clearly strengthen my Avodas Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending me a message. But if Chas V'Shalom, after the tzara is removed, we just go back to the way we were before, well, clearly that was not the purpose. And if chas v'shalom, somebody says, well, I strengthened myself during milchama, so what do you want? HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring another milchama in order to be mischazik? The aim of the game is, again, that it should be nozir yihyeh. And that's why we have to be so careful at these times not to cave into the Yetzer Hara. As I've said many, many occasions before, The Yetzer Hara loves dressing up as the Yetzer HaTov. So what am I going to change? What am I going to undertake? These major, massive changes. Surely that's the Yetzer HaTov speaking to me. No, it's not. It's the Yetzer Hara. Why? Because he knows you can't maintain that. And he knows that after this Milchama is finished, hopefully Bekarov Mamish, he knows that you will not be able to maintain it. Far, far, far more beneficial is to look carefully at our Avodas Hashem and make a small change. That's something that can be maintained, and that's something that is really the whole purpose of this whole Tzara in the first place. If you remember, I hope we quoted last week, the Rambam, the very famous Rambam. I think we mentioned it, but it's worth repeating if we did. The Rambam, in the beginning of Hilchas Taanis, says that if somebody ignores a Tzara and says it's just Mikra, then how do we describe that person? Says the Rambam, he's a cruel person. He's achzori. Why is he cruel? If you would ask me, I'd say, yeah, it's nothing to do with cruelty. He's just not listening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu talking to him. And the answer is because if there's tzara, and the purpose was in order to wake up, well, if we don't wake up and we don't improve, then what are we in fact saying? That all those people that were killed, Rahman al-Islam, it's for no purpose. It was all meaningless. It didn't make any difference to my life at all. That is the most cruel thing that we could possibly do. If, however, we undertake a change, which is something that we can be internalized forever, then we are ensuring that those people who are Rahman al-Islam, who were killed or taken or injured, whatever it may be, it was not for nothing. It was not for no purpose. But if indeed it's for no purpose, well, that's the most cruel thing we could possibly do, have somebody killed for no purpose. So for that's really the avoid at the moment. The avoid at the moment is nozir yihya, not so much, not so important the way we're behaving now. More important is, are we able to maintain this, to make this a lifetime change? Reb Larry, you wanted it? Yeah.
Why can't we learn that nozir is more than 30 from the story of Shimshon?
We could, but that's not in the Nov. That's not in the Torah. It's on the Torah, number one. Number two, Shimshon was an exception. Shimshon was what was called Nazirus Olam. Nobody says you can't be a Nazir forever. We're talking about what's the minimum Nazirus. There's two types of Nazirus. There's one type of Nazirus where you give it a time. If you don't, the minimum is 30 days. And there's something else called Nazirus Shimshon, which is a Nazir forever. That's a different type of Nazirus. But essentially, it's learned from a Pasuk in the Nov. Okay, we'll hold it over here, Mitzvah Hashem, and Be'ezus Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick this up.